Our Father, we thank you for this morning, for this time that we could be here as brothers and sisters in Christ. Father, it is a joy to be here with family as we are in your house to hear your word. We ask that this time would be a blessing and a time of growth and maturity. We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. So this is it for Joshua. We have come to the end of the book of Joshua. This is going to be a very brief overview of kind of the flow of the book of Joshua, some of the things that we've seen before we move on to something else. And I'm sure we will find something else entertaining that, you know, to take us through the next few months. And Trey may have had a lot to do with putting it together. So, Joshua, you know, just and this is about as high level outline as you can get without just saying Joshua. But the book really is broken down into four portions or four segments. The first five chapters are dedicated to entering the land. You know, we have the whole Pentateuch that builds up to this moment, and there's all these promises that surround entering the land. And this is that time of fulfillment when they enter the land. And then we move into Joshua 6 through 12, and this is the conquering of the land, the taking the land. Or, if you take it a little bit differently, this is the giving of the land, right, where it's being taken from the descendants of Ham, right, from Canaan, and being given to the Israelites. Joshua 13 to 21 is about the allotment of the land. Who gets which piece? And that will be probably the most briefly discussed this morning, simply because there's an awful lot of geography. And then we get to the final section. I call that keeping the land, and we'll discuss that a little more then. So, starting in Joshua 1, verses 1 through 7. Now it came about after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' servant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, cross this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, to the sons of Israel. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given it to you, just as I spoke to Moses. From the wilderness in this Lebanon, even as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and as far as the great sea toward the setting of the sun will be your territory. No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall give this people possession of the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous. Be careful to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, so that you may have success wherever you go. So here Joshua starts off with this new phase in Joshua's life. He's now the man. He's the leader. He spent 45, 50 years being Moses' lieutenant. He was number two. Right? And now he's been promoted from number two to number one. We saw that happen back in Deuteronomy. The end of Deuteronomy covers the handing of the baton from God's part, when God chose Joshua. But this is the functional change of command right here. God says, get up and let's go. Now, this first chapter especially, there's this back and forth comparison between Moses and Joshua. And they go back and forth here. So God promised the land through Moses. God fulfills his promise through Joshua. We see that in verse 3. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given it to you, just as I spoke to Moses. All right, so there's this you, Moses thing there. Then we get down to verse 5. It says, just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Now, was God with Moses, kind of? A little bit, Laura? What do you think? A little bit, a lot, somewhere in between? You sure? Why would you say a lot?
Because
Because he's Moses. Taylor? Did Moses do a miracle or two? Yeah. What kind of things did Moses do, or did the Lord do through Moses? He split the waters. What else? There might be a couple plagues that happened. Were those little things? No, those were pretty big things. There was maybe the giving of the law, God working through Moses. We've got a couple times that water came from nothing, right? Tap on the rock and you get water. That's pretty miraculous in the desert, right? God did a lot of things through Moses. And here God tells Joshua, I'm going to be with you just like Moses. And that's a big thing. Moses was great. And here you get sidekick. And you can see Joshua seeing himself as Moses' sidekick. And God says, you're not sidekick anymore. I will be with you. And he keeps telling him, be strong, be courageous. Don't be afraid to step up to bat. You're it. And I'm making you it. So, but we get down to the end. And again, this is Joshua Moses. There at the end, he says, if you want to be successful, stick to the law. Keep the law. Hold fast to the law that I gave through Moses. And so even there, Joshua's success kind of builds on the success of his predecessor, Moses. But so throughout the book, there's this kind of Moses-Joshua thing going on, but it's not against each other. They're not competing with each other. Joshua is right there with Moses. And so that attests to the greatness of Joshua. Jumping down to chapter 1, verses 12 and 13. To the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh, Joshua said, remember the word which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, saying, the Lord your God gives you rest and will give you this land. And then verses 16 to 18. They answered Joshua, saying, all that you have commanded us we will do, and wherever you send us we will go. Just as we obeyed Moses in all things, so we will obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. Anyone who rebels against your command and does not obey your words in all that you command him shall be put to death. Only be strong and courageous. So the people give Joshua the very same message that God did. You're in charge, and we will treat you like we treated Moses. Right? We obeyed Moses, we'll obey you. And that, there may be a little bit of rosy glow there as they look at their relationship with Moses, maybe a little bit. Right? But their intent there is, you're our leader, and we'll follow you. You're it. Pull up your pants, tighten your belt, be strong, be courageous, be a man, and lead us. And that's the same thing God says. So he's getting the same message from top and bottom. You think maybe it's time for Joshua to be leader? And that's what this first chapter is about, is Joshua, you're in charge. Joshua is not Moses, but he is Moses' successor, chosen by God to be Moses' successor in everything. And God is going to fulfill all these promises that he gave through Moses. It's Joshua's job to carry those out, and God's going to do that through him. Right? So this giving of the promised land, this fulfillment of this huge portion of the Abrahamic covenant, that's Joshua. That's not Moses. That's Joshua. Right? So this first chapter, it's this clear transition between the leadership of Moses and the leadership of Joshua. But it maintains this continuity of God is the one leading the nation. He simply now has a new instrument that he's working through. I'm going to jump ahead to chapter 3 because this is a summary. Chapter 3, verse 7. Now the Lord said to Joshua, this day I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. And then down to 16 and 17. The waters which were flowing down from above stood and rose up in one heap, a great distance away at Adam, the city that is beside Zarethan. And those which were flowing down from down towards the Sea of Arabah, the Salt Sea, were completely cut off. So the people crossed opposite Jericho. And the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the middle of the Jordan, while all Israel crossed on dry ground until all the nation had finished crossing the Jordan. On that day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, so that they revered him, just as they had revered Moses all the days of his life. So here we get the crossing of the Jordan, and that is like what? Taylor, Laura, what's that like? Crossing the Red Sea. This is the same thing, right? And this is God doing this for Joshua and for the people, not just to get them into the land of Israel, but to build this relationship where the people look to Joshua with respect, with reverence, because he is God's chosen leader. And so this miracle is kind of attested to Joshua, right? Because he said, let's go, this is what's going to happen today, and it happened. And it's big in the way that the parting of the Red Sea was big. And God did this. We see that in 4:14, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel. So this is God building up Joshua, just as he said he would back in 3:7. And God says, I'm going to do this for you, and he does it, and Israel says, you're it. So this is, again, this is Joshua benefiting. This is God working. Joshua's reaping the blessing of being God's choice. But even here we see this. Moses is the standard. You see that? I will be with you like I was with Moses. The people revered him like they did Moses. Moses is this standard by which it seems like everybody else is going to be measured. Until the Gospels. And we get to the Gospels and we get the new Moses, who is the new standard by which everyone else is measured. Right? Prophets are measured against Moses. Right? And God says, Moses is the only one I talk to this way. Right? Prophets, there's prophets, and I talk to them, but not like I talk to Moses. But Moses is that standard. Moving quickly. Chapter 5, verses 7 to 12. Their children, whom he raised up in their place, Joshua circumcised. For they were uncircumcised because they had not circumcised them along the way. Now when they had finished circumcising all the nation, they remained in their places in the camp until they were healed. Then the Lord said to Joshua, today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. So the name of that place is called Gilgal to this day. While the sons of Israel camped at Gilgal, they observed the Passover on the evening of the 14th day of the month on the desert plains of Jericho. On the day after the Passover, on that very day, they ate some of the produce of the land, unleavened cake and parched grain. The manna ceased on the day after they had eaten some of the produce of the land, so that the sons of Israel no longer had manna, but they ate some of the yield of the land of Canaan during that year. So this has all been preparation for God to give them the land. And they're now in the land. Right? They've crossed over the Jordan. They're in the land, but it's not theirs yet. Because we're missing a couple crucial steps, crucial pieces. One, they're descendants of Abraham, but they don't have the sign of the Abrahamic covenant. Right? Circumcision was the sign of that covenant. It wasn't their place as Abrahamic descendants. They were still descendants of Abraham, even though they didn't have the circumcision, but they weren't participating in the blessings, and they weren't ready to participate in the blessings until they were bearing the sign. And so the circumcision here part is all about bringing them back into the Abrahamic covenant, so they're in compliance with this agreement that God made with Abraham, because God's about to fulfill a big chunk of that covenant. So he gets them ready to receive God's blessing by becoming obedient again. And we see the same thing with the Passover. That was part of the Mosaic Covenant. Kind of one of the founding steps of the Mosaic Covenant is Passover. So they celebrate Passover. And it would seem that they'd gone 40 years, no celebration of Passover. So here they are in the land. They get Passover, they've been circumcised, now they're ready. And there's this association here where they are now being disassociated with Egypt and associated with Abraham. So they are now properly oriented to receive God's provision. And the first thing that happens after that is they stop getting free food. They are no longer on God's food stamps. They are now receiving the blessing of the land. They are partaking in the food that has grown right there in the land of Israel. Well, at that point, it was still the land of Canaan, but the land that God was going to give them. And the manna was one of those things that was just to hold them over until that point. Once they're there, they don't need manna anymore. They have the land. So the manna ends. It's not needed anymore. All right, so this is the closing of that period of transition from the slavery of Egypt to the freedom of Israel. That transition is over. They're here. That's entering the land. Now we get to the conquering of the land. This is chapters 6 to 12, I think. Now this covers the conquest, and the conquest starts with the fall of Jericho. Chapter 6, verses 15 to 17. Then on the seventh day, that they arose early at the dawning of the day and marched around the city in the same manner seven times. Only on that day they marched around the city seven times. At the seventh time, when the priests blew the trumpets, Joshua said to the people, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city. The city shall be under the ban, and all that is in it belongs to the Lord. Only Rahab the harlot and all who are with her in the house shall live, because she hid the messengers whom we sent." And then verses 24 and 25. They burned the city with fire and all that was in it. Only the silver and gold and articles of bronze and iron they put in the treasury of the house of the Lord. However, Rahab the harlot and her father's household and all that she had, Joshua spared, and she has lived in the midst of Israel to this day, for she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. All right, so Jericho, you may remember this, Jericho was the first fruits. Here they are in the land, and God says, "You're going to give me a first fruits offering," and Jericho is it. So everything of value in Jericho is taken into the temple treasury. Everything else is burned, destroyed, nothing allowed to survive, except. And this is a huge exception. We have Rahab of questionable job line here, and yet this woman blessed Israel by protecting their spies. She sent them back and she said, "I know you guys are going to win. We've heard what your God does. And I want to be with you." And then she's shown grace. She's spared. So God goes in and he says, "Wipe out everything except Rahab." And so we get this new role then. Right, or a reintroduction of an old role. And this is of a God-fearing Gentile in the context of God's chosen people. Right, and this is something new. Right, new, I mean, we can go back to before Abraham. Everybody that was God-fearing was God-fearing Gentile. But now with this Israel as God's chosen people, what do you do with a God-fearing Gentile? Right, and here, she is treated like a Jew. Now, she's not a descendant of Abraham. She's not. But she marries in. She becomes part of the family of Christ, the lineage of Christ. And she lives in the land. See that there? She has lived in the midst of Israel to this day. She participates in God's blessing of the land of Israel to Abraham's descendants, even though she is not herself a descendant of Abraham. That's what happens with God-fearing Gentiles. They are given God's blessing, and they participate along with Israel. And we see God's willingness to spare from judgment those who turn to him. She turned to him, and she did not get destroyed with the rest of Jericho. And this is the first half of a lesson there with her. Now, then we have another lesson. We get to Joshua 6:27 and 7:1. So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was in all the land. But the sons of Israel acted unfaithfully in regard to the things under the ban. For Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, son of Zerah, from the tribe of Judah, took some of the things under the ban. Therefore, the anger of the Lord burned against the sons of Israel. And then verses 5 and 6. The men of Ai struck down 36 of their men and pursued them from the gate as far as Shibarim, and struck them down on the descent, so that the hearts of the people melted and became as water. Then Joshua tore his clothes and fell on the earth on his face before the ark of the Lord until evening, both he and the elders of Israel, and they put dust on their heads. So here with the destruction of Jericho, we have this reminder, God's with Joshua. And what happens next is not a Joshua problem. It's not Joshua's fault. Now, if you think back just a few verses, people said, you know, you say it, we do it. Whatever it is. And anyone who doesn't obey you, we'll get rid of them. We'll execute them. Disobedience is a capital offense. And then we get to Jericho, and God's with Joshua, but the sons of Israel disobeyed. Well, how many sons actually disobeyed? One. All right, but so here we get this kind of principle of unity and community. Right. It's only one guy that did it. In our mindset, he's guilty, no one else is, so why are they paying the price? And that's not always how it works. Right, there's this unity thing, and there's a pollution effect here. Right, we have one guy, and all it takes to pollute the whole is one. And he does it, right, by taking something that he wasn't supposed to, should not have done. He took something that was under the ban, and 36 other guys die. Right, Israel loses its first... faces the first loss coming into the land of Israel, especially hard after coming down off the high of, we really, really won. And then they really, really lost. So there's this, but this is Achan. Right? And so because of Achan, the sons of Israel as a whole suffer. And this is going to come back. This argument is going to come up again. So as they face this, Joshua and leaders bow down before the Lord in humility, or in sorrow. What's going on, Lord? Now, jumping forward to chapter 7, verses 20 and 21. So Achan answered Joshua and said, truly, I have sinned against the Lord, the God of Israel, and this is what I did. When I saw among the spoil a beautiful mantle from Shinar and 200 shekels of silver and a bar of gold, 50 shekels in weight, then I coveted them and took them, and behold, they are concealed in the earth inside my tent with silver underneath it. And jumping down to 25 and 26, Joshua said, why have you troubled us? The Lord will trouble you this day. And all Israel stoned them with stones, and they burned them with fire after they had stoned them with stones. And they raised over him a great heap of stones that stands to this day. And the Lord turned from the fierceness of his anger. Therefore, the name of that place has been called the Valley of Achor to this day. All right, so God used the lot. He pointed out who was responsible for the sin, who did it, and Achan fesses up. Of course, he only fesses up once he's confronted with it. But he says, yeah, I did it. All right, this is what I did. I took stuff. It was good-looking stuff. I mean, who wouldn't, really, when you're looking at that much gold and that much silver? How could you say no? Well, that's what he says. So he took it, he hid it, and his whole family dies. Matter of fact, they treat Achan exactly how they treat Jericho. By taking the stuff of Jericho, he has now associated himself with Jericho, not with Israel anymore. He functionally becomes a Gentile, a Canaanite. Because he took their stuff. He liked their stuff. Right? So he became a Canaanite and is treated like a Canaanite. So we have Rahab the Canaanite who's treated like an Israelite. We have an Israelite who's disobedient and becomes treated like the Canaanite. There's this great swap. Right? So we have the family of Abraham, blessings of Abraham, gained by one and lost by one. At least the blessings. Right? And remember here the importance of family and lineage and being carried on. Achan, his family is never assigned their place in the land. He doesn't live long enough to get a chunk allotted to them. His family is completely cut off. He has no children to inherit. His sin has brought about the end of his family line forever. They're done right here, and they never get to participate fully in the blessings of the land of Israel. I'm jumping all the way forward to chapter 10, all right, verses 8 and 9. The Lord said to Joshua, "Do not fear them, for I have given them into your hands. Not one of them shall stand before you." So Joshua came upon them suddenly by marching all night from Gilgal. And the Lord confounded them before Israel, and he slew them with a great slaughter at Gibeon, and pursued them by way of the ascent of Beth-horon, and struck them as far as Azekah and Makeda. And they fled from before Israel, and while they were at the descent of Beth-horon, the Lord threw large stones from heaven on them as far as Azekah, and they died. There were more who died from the hailstones than those whom the sons of Israel killed with the sword. In verse 14, there was no day like that before it or after it when the Lord listened to the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel. So you may remember that the Gibeonites defected. They said, you know, they used a little bit of deception and said, "We're from a long way away, and we want to worship your God. We know how powerful he is. We want to serve you. Just let us be your servants and, you know, make a covenant." It was deception. It was trickery. It was deceit. And the Israelites fell for it, including Joshua. But once they'd made that promise, they kept it. And when the Canaanites came against the people of Gibeon, the Israelites were right there to defend them. And God says, you go up and I'll take care of it for you. Right? And what makes this amazing is that God, through this battle, he destroys this massive army of five kings, some of it through your normal battle kind of victory, and a lot of it through, "Hey, I'm going to do this for you. Get out of the way. You're slowing me down." And he takes care of this huge chunk all by himself. And so here we have God fighting for Israel. As a matter of fact, this is another spot where Joshua, God says, "You know, Joshua, they need to keep revering you. I'm going to build you up some more." Joshua does a unique, one-of-a-kind, never-been-done-before, never-done-again miracle. He says, "Need the sun to hold still so we can do this right and finish this battle." And God does it. Unique. Never happens ever again. This is it. And this is God building up Joshua by doing this miracle. But even the miracle is kind of secondary to the fact that, yeah, God just went before them and killed their enemies. And who can stand against that? No one. Jumping down to 10:30 and then 10:32. "The Lord gave it also with its king into the hands of Israel, and he struck it, and every person who was with it with the edge of the sword, he left no survivor in it. Thus he did to its king, just as he had done to the king of Jericho. The Lord gave Lachish into the hands of Israel, and he captured it on the second day, and he struck it, and every person who was in it with the edge of the sword, according to all that he had done at Libna." And there's no context there, and I did that on purpose. Right. I'm typically a context person, but you know, those verses sound an awful lot the same, and that's because there's a whole string of them where they fought and they won, and they fought and they won, and God gave them another victory, and gave them another victory, and gave them another victory. And there's a couple chapters of, hey, this is God just giving them a whole string of conquest victories. And there's not supposed to be a lot of context there. It's just saying, and they kept winning, and they kept winning, and they kept winning, and they throw some names on it so you know where. We get down to 11, 5, and 6. "So all these kings, having agreed to meet, came and encamped together at the waters of Merom to fight against Israel. Then the Lord said to Joshua, 'Do not be afraid because of them, for tomorrow at this time I will deliver all of them slain before Israel. You shall hamstring their horses and burn their chariots with fire.'" So don't worry, Joshua. I got it handled. You beat them. And they do. And that's the conquest of the land right there. God wins, and Israel is blessed. 13 to 21 is the allotment of the land. And chapter 13 provides a summary of God's call to Joshua to finish the job. Right? They need to allot the land out to different portions of the various tribes. Right? And it starts with this review of Manasseh, or half of Manasseh, and Reuben and Gad, so the two and a half tribes. And here, again, there's this Moses-Joshua thing. Moses gave the two and a half tribes this chunk of land. So that's where it starts with. This is what Moses did. That was back in Numbers. And then the rest of it is, this is what Joshua does as he finishes the job. So that starts in chapter 14. That's Joshua and the high priest Eleazar. We get to 14, verses 10 to 14. Now behold, the Lord has let me live just as he spoke these 45 years from the time that the Lord spoke this word to Moses, when Israel walked in the wilderness. And behold, now I am 85 years old today. I am still as strong today as I was in the day Moses sent me. As my strength was then, so my strength is now for war and for going out and coming in. Now then, give me this hill country about which the Lord spoke on that day, for you heard on that day that the Anakim were there with great fortified cities. Perhaps the Lord will be with me, and I will drive them out as the Lord has spoken. Joshua blessed him and gave Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, for an inheritance. Therefore, Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, until this day, because he followed the Lord, the God of Israel, fully. Right, and we know this, right? Caleb was one of the two faithful spies, and God said, well, you get to go into the land. I'll bless you with the peace that you spied out. And Caleb comes back and says, it's time. Now, he went in when he was 40. He comes back when he's 85, and he says, I'm just as fit and ready for battle as I was when I was 40. Let me go get him. And he takes the biggest, the hardest. He says, those are mine. I want them. Maybe God will give them to me. Right? And there's a little tongue-in-cheek humor there. There's no question in Caleb's mind who's going to win that battle. He is. That's his land they're sitting on. He goes out and he takes it. So this is Caleb's victory over these giants, right, that God gives to Caleb. Then we get to... It is messed up there. I won't read it to you. There's 16 to 19, there's a lot of geography of who gets which chunk of land. And then we get to chapter 20, is the establishment of these cities of refuge. And these are for the purpose of justice, deliverance, for people who are not guilty of a death sentence. This gives them a place that they can go. It's a new home away from home, quite literally, because they have to stay there, well, forever, either till they die or until the death of the high priest. This is their refuge. If it's entirely self-imposed. I mean, it's voluntary. They can leave anytime they want. But, of course, if they step outside the gates, if they're found, they're killed. But that's their choice. But here, this city of refuge, it provides safety, because these folks are not deserving of death. It was an accidental manslaughter. They didn't mean to do it. If it was intentional, they'd get executed. So no problem there. But this provides them safety from a death sentence. And the whole thing looks forward to Jesus Christ, who is the high priest. And the death of the high priest provides freedom. Freedom from the results of sin. Freedom from a death sentence. So there's this point that it looks forward and anticipates what Jesus Christ would do from a different angle. We're used to thinking in terms of sacrifice, and that's certainly there. But this, he is also the high priest. When we get to the final section, and I call this keeping the land, because it's about retaining God's blessing. In these last three chapters, starts with Joshua 22. Joshua meets with the two and a half tribes. He says, you fulfilled your obligation. Right, Moses told you, you have to come and help, and you've done that. They have honored their commitment. They came and they helped the rest of the tribes take the land. And it wasn't done. It wasn't completely finished. But they had done They had met their obligation. He says, go home to your families. Go home to your own inheritance. Make sure you keep the law. Make sure you hold fast to the Lord. And the very next thing that happens is they build an altar. Well, the only place you're supposed to build altars and have sacrifices is where the tabernacle's at. And right now, this was Shiloh. Nowhere else. Nowhere else. And they go home and they build this altar. And so, well, it sounds like a job for Phineas. Right? Not Phineas and Ferb. This is Phineas. Right? If the name Phineas sounds vaguely familiar, he's the young priest who, when there was the whole plague and lots of people dying, thousands and thousands and thousands of people dying, there's a young man who happens to bring home a nice young Midianite girl to do whatever he's going to do in their tent. He says, right? And he takes care of it. He runs them through. Right? And that stops the plague. That Phineas. Well, if you got a problem and you need a priest to sort it out, Phineas is your man. Right? So Phineas goes over and says, what's going on? And this, remember, this is about land. But Phineas, he brings up the Achan thing. He says, you know, one guy, Achan, all right, and the whole nation suffered. What's going to happen when 2.5 tribes turn their back on God? We won't be able to survive that. You got to knock this off. All right, that's Phineas' argument right there. He says, if the problem is with your land, if your land is unclean, verse 19, he says, however, if the land in your possession is unclean, then cross into the land of the possession of the Lord, where the Lord's tabernacle stands, and take possession among us. Only do not rebel against the Lord or rebel against us by building an altar for yourselves beside the altar of the Lord our God. This is about land. Remember, Moses gave them this big chunk east of the Jordan. He says, if your land's not good enough, you come over here and stay with us. Let's take the problem out of the picture. Give up that land that Moses gave you and come over here if that's what it takes to keep you worshiping the Lord. And the tribes say, yeah, this is about the land. And this is about being Israel. But we're afraid you're going to forget. And we're afraid that our kids might forget. So we built this altar to remind us. And we see in verse 27, rather it shall be a witness between us and you and between our generations after us that we are to perform the service of the Lord before him with our burnt offerings and with our sacrifices and with our peace offerings so that your sons will not say to our sons in time to come, you have no portion in the Lord. Y'all live on the other side of the river so you don't count. That's what they're afraid is going to happen. Not in 10 years, not in 20 years, but 100 years, 150, 200 years later, right, are the people who live in the formal land, because it's between the Jordan and the sea, are they going to look at the people outside and say, you guys don't count because you got the wrong chunk of land? And that's what this altar was about. Say, no, we are not disinherited. We are not outside the covenant. Our land still counts. So they have their inheritance, and it has been given to them by God through Moses. And this was a reminder. Then we get to Joshua's final farewell speeches in chapters 23 and 24. And there's long summaries of God did this, and God did this, and God did this, and God did this. And we get down to 23:16. When you transgress the covenant of the Lord your God, and which he commanded you, and go and serve other gods and bow down to them, then the anger of the Lord will burn against you, and you will perish quickly from off the good land which he has given you. They have just taken this nation. Now it's taken 5 years, right? But they have just taken the nation. God's given it to them. He's divided it up now. He says, it belongs to you. And then Joshua reminds him, stick to the Lord, because what God can give, he can take away. So look at the blessing around you. Remember all that God has done and stick with him. Because when you turn aside, you go to someone else, he's going to take it back. He's going to remove you from the land. And that first is to the leaders, the elders, the judges. We get to chapter 24. The same thing is said to the congregation. Verses 18 to 21. The Lord drove out from before us all the peoples, even the Amorites who lived in the land. We will serve the Lord, for he is our God. Then Joshua said to the people, you will not be able to serve the Lord, for he is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgression or your sins. If you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, then he will turn and do you harm and consume you after he has done good to you. The people said to Joshua, no, but we will serve the Lord. So he tells the people, same message. You'll lose this land that God has given you if you don't stick with him. Right, so the same message told twice. It's told to the top, it's told to the bottom. Everybody hears the message, and the people say, we will stay with the Lord. And you know what they did? This generation, not a problem. They had seen God's blessings. They had seen his miracles. This generation did not cause a problem. Everybody that lived to see Joshua, they stuck with it. It was just the next generations after that became problems. But the failure to serve God was the loss of blessings, even those blessings that have been long held. So the book of Joshua as a whole is a demonstration God keeps his promises. Right? It indicates how God has kept his promise to the nation of Israel. He's given them the land as their inheritance. And he keeps his promises to individuals like Caleb and Joshua. Both of them, there were promises made to them specifically. Right? And both Caleb and Joshua were given the pieces of land that God had promised them. And God is gracious and willing to allow others to experience his blessing if they turn to him. But a faithful God expects faithfulness on the part of his people. And those who are faithless may lose the blessing. That's the book of Joshua in 45 minutes.